Hello and welcome to the Waterways Ireland podcast, a new series with me, Turtle Bunbury, in which I'm exploring the rich history of Ireland's waterways. In the last episode, we looked at how most of Ireland's rivers and lakes are named for goddesses and gods of the Tuatha De Danann. In this episode of Glaciers and Cranachs, I want to look at the geology and the archaeological record of what's in and around our Irish waterways. Trying to make sense of the shape-shifting geology of Ireland is a complicated business, and I'm certainly no expert here. I find much of it fascinating, like how the island of Ireland was once split in two, with the northwest chunk belonging to a continent called Laurentia, and the rest of the island was part of another continent called Gondwana. And then you've got all those tectonic shifts going on millions of years ago, creating our oceans and whatnot, and geological faults and all sorts of other things, but I'm not going there. I'm not a geographer or a geologist, but I do respect a mantra I once heard that everything is geology. From my understanding, a period of glaciation kicked off about 120,000 years ago, and Ireland disappeared under these vast sheets of ice. Some of the sheets were over a kilometre high, so that's quite a serious iceberg. And I think I've seen it said that the ice was at its thickest over present-day Fermanagh and Leitrim and that part of the world, bringing it forward to about 27,000 years ago. And the end of the last glacial period, much of our present-day landscape was shaped by their glaciers that were slipping and sliding and retreating, and the meltwaters that are set free from the glaciers that now rushed down from the higher lands, carrying sand and gravel and boulders and clay, and sculpting the bogs through which our canals now glide, and carving paths through the weaker sediments, like limestone, which is the predominant rock in Ireland, but leaving the harder rocks behind to form glens and valleys and rivers. That's when rivers like the Shannon and the Boyne and the Erne were formed. And oh, I know, I spent the whole of the last episode telling you how they were carved out by crazy fish and ill-fated goddesses, but, you know, you're unlikely to pass your geography exams if you write that sort of stuff. Thus, our rivers today flow through corridors that were basically carved out and scoured and deepened and widened by glaciers during that last ice age. And sometimes they created eskers, ridges like the one by the Shannon on which the monastery of Clonmacnoise was built. In other places, the glaciers deposited mounds of earth called drumlins, like the ones that are all around the Ulster Canal or the ones that show up as islands on Loch Earn. It's reckoned there are 154 islands on Loch Earn between the upper and lower lakes, and I think they're almost all drumlins. I know some are pretty titchy, but they all tend to have the same shape. A round steep back on the east side, and then a kind of staggered slope on the west side. That's all part of the sculpting from the last ice age. When the ice melted and the waterways began to appear, some of the first creatures to graze on the riverbanks were woolly mammoths, spotted hyenas, brown bears, and giant deer. We know about the giant deer because we keep finding their skeletons and their heads and their antlers. Quite a few of them were in the bogs at a place called Slaty on the banks of the River Barrow just outside Carlow town. These poor giant deer were kiboshed about 10,000 years ago when the birth of forests completely transformed the island's tundra landscape. The problem was the span of their antlers. Their antlers, it was about the same as the width of a car bonnet. So that's actually quite a lot to carry about with you. Next time you look at a car, have a look and you'll see what I mean. And the adult deer, it just couldn't fit through all the newly formed trees that were growing up all around the country. And it's like being a victim of some sort of Greek curse. But they became, well, first of all, they became very easy prey for any hunters. But also in the case of the luckless giant deer that were found in the slaty bog, they seem to have scampered onto the bogland, marshland, and sunk, which is, you know, a really inglorious end for such a lovely beast. Now, humans have enjoyed eating deer for a long, long time. A reindeer bone that was discovered in a cave near Doneraile in North Cork. It's rather startlingly, it appears to have been chopped up by a human 33,000 years ago. Who, why, what, I don't know. What I can tell you is that Ireland's oldest known graveyard is alongside one of Ireland's best known waterways. It's a burial pit for cremated bones, and it's situated on a bend of the River Shannon by Castle Connell in County Limerick. The grave is from around 9,500, maybe 10,000 years ago, and it's a period we call the Mesolithic. We don't know a whole lot about Mesolithic people, but they were hunter-gatherers who voyaged on the waters in dug-out log canoes. They trapped and speared migrating salmon, as well as sea bass and eel and other fish that swam up the estuaries and around the coastline. There was also a small but hugely important Mesolithic settlement on a high ridge near Coleraine. It's called Mount Sandal, and it overlooks the River Ban. And that community, well, it was built in a clearing in a primitive forest, again, about 9,000 years ago. That's a long time ago. And we know there were also Mesolithic communities on Loch Ney in County Down and Loch Sker in Leitrim. And the Loch Burra Parklands, which you'll find just off the Grand Canal Greenway, about 20 kilometres west of Tullamore. Swing across to the River Boyne, and well, it goes without saying that the Boyne is a hugely rich area in terms of ancient archaeology. There's a few hints of those Mesolithic people we met earlier, some flint tools found here and there. But the Boyne Valley's big moment came in a period called the Neolithic, or the New Stone Age, which is around about 5,000-6,000 years ago. That's when Brú na Boyne came of age, and Brú na Boyne is home to one of the world's largest concentrations of Neolithic sites and megalithic art. And you've probably heard of the passage grave at Newgrange, and it's that's the pièce de résistance of the Brú na Boyne. Maybe you know about Nauth and Douth, but there are stacks more. You might remember the amazing hot summer of 2018 in our pre-Covidian bliss. The drought conditions of that summer in Ireland gave our archaeologists an amazing opportunity to find things on our landscape that we'd never seen before. They found over 50 new monuments in the Boyne Valley alone. 50 new ones that they didn't know about before. They've also found various log boats, including at least one Neolithic boat that was going up and down the River Boyne about 5,000 years ago. It's incredible stuff. Ireland at that time was heavily wooded, mostly oak, so for anyone trying to get into the interior of the island, rivers were a logical means of transport and communication. Boats, of course, were invented long before the wheel. And there's evidence of Neolithic activity all across other Irish waterways too. A hat trick of portal tombs on the upper reaches of the River Erne near Scrabby Bridge, and a quartz tomb by Ballyconnell in County Cavan, just off the Shannon Erne. On the Barrow Navigation, near Monastrevin, County Kildare, there's the remnants of a dolmen that has now collapsed, but which was clearly the burial tomb of a once important tribal chief from the locality. When they were draining the Barrow to make it a more efficient waterway, they found literally hundreds of stone axe heads on the riverbed at Monastrevin. These were mostly found at the spots where people could cross the river. There's three of them in the town. And you might think that these were all dropped in battle, but it's believed that people in ancient Ireland often sacrificed their axe heads to the rivers as votive offerings to show their reverence for such and such a river god or goddess. And shields and spears were sometimes dropped into the rivers for much the same reason. I don't know. We mentioned before how the Barrow is probably named for a Tuatha De Danann goddess. So maybe those stone axes that were dropped in the River Barrow were for her. I mentioned spears. Leinster derives its Irish name, Laggin, from the broad blue-grey iron spearheads. They're called loinia, and these were used by warriors from that part of the world, around Carlow, Kildare, in the Bronze Age. And it all connects to a pretty grisly story that happened on the River Barrow, about 50 kilometres south of Monastrevin by Loughlin Bridge in County Carlow. And there's an ancient hill fort right by the River Barrow there. It's still there. It's called the Dinry, the Hill of the Kings. And this story is straight from the Game of Thrones School of Grimness. But basically, in about 300 BC, a warrior named Lobrig Linshock returned home to Ireland after 30 years in exile. He'd fled the country after his wicked uncle had poisoned his grandfather and his father and stolen the throne of Leinster. And the wicked uncle was Cubhock Cole, or Cubhock the Skinny. A great name. Lobrig Linshock, he returned to Ireland. He brought with him a force of about 2,000 warriors, all armed with those razor-sharp spears I just mentioned. And one way or another, he got Cubhock to come and meet him inside a purpose-built palace at Dinry. And Cubhock, he's pretty smart. He actually refused to attend unless Lobrig's mother and Lobrig's jester went. You know, he needed a guarantee of his safety. So Lobrig agreed, said, fine, my mum will be there, my jester will be there. So Cubhock, he went in to the palace with his top 30 chieftains and his 700 hardiest warriors, and they tucked into all the food and the ale, and Cubhock looked across and he could see that Lobrig's mother and his jester were sitting down with him. So all is going to be fine, right? Wrong. Because meanwhile, Lobrig has chained the doors shut and he burnt the palace down, killing everyone inside, including his mother and his jester. The jester had apparently been promised freedom for his family if he gave his life, while Lobrig's devoted mother was apparently happy to be roasted if it meant that her darling boy would at last become High King of Ireland, which he did. And the Laggan people duly gave their name to the province of Leinster. At least that's how the story is told in the Book of Leinster. So let's now race up from the River Barrow to County Fermanagh to Boa Island, the largest island in Lough Erne, where we have some astonishing relics from those ancient times. The stone figure of a pagan deity, worshipped 2,000 years ago, maybe more. It's 2 foot high, a bilateral figure, meaning it has two sides. It's a male on one side and a female on the other, and the female is sticking her tongue out. She might be Baive, who's the Celtic goddess of war, for whom Boa Island is maybe named. We're in speculation territory again. Baive is quite often depicted as a crow, and this figure does not look like a crow. There was also an intriguing theory that it was Roman, that it was connected to Janus, as in January, because Janus is often depicted with two sides. He is the god of beginnings and endings, as well as gates and doorways. And you've got to love the ancients. They had a god for everything, a god of doorways. So next time you slam your thumb in a door, you know that Janus has it in for you. Anyway, Janus was often represented as having two faces looking in opposite directions, just as a door has two faces. The notion that the Boa Island figure was some sort of Janus got a bit of a lift when the late and much lamented Seamus Heaney penned his poem January God and made the comparison, but from what I can gather, most archaeologists are pretty sure that the Boa Island figure is not a representation of Janus. Also on Boa Island is the similar but slightly older Lustymore Island figure. It was actually moved to Boa in 1939 after it was discovered in an early Christian graveyard on Lustymore Island, which is just to the south. Some have hailed it as an early version of the Sheila na Gigs that appeared in Ireland in the medieval age, and certainly her arms lie across her torso and they're pointing towards an inverted V that represents the top of the vulva. When were these figures made? Who knows? Maybe the Iron Age, but there are also a bunch of primitive looking figures from White Island in Lochearn that date from the early Christian period, so they may be from that period. Ireland's waterways were a lot messier in days of old, before we'd kind of tamed the riverbanks and invested a huge amount of manpower into controlling the flow and the shape of them. So 2,000-3,000 years ago, the riverbanks would have been much boggier marshlands, and trying to cross them on foot or with a horse or your chariot maybe, well, there were only a handful of places along any given river where you could get across, either because there was a bridge or a ford of some sort. But we do also have evidence of a lot of bog roads or tochers that were laid upon the surface of these marshlands to help people get from A to B. These were built by laying large, rough-hewn planks of wood, oak and brushwood and so on, along the boggy ground, and then there was maybe a layer of gravel spread on top so that the roads could be used by carts and chariots. I've seen one of these tochers which runs through the Great Midlands Bog at Maine in County Westmeath, and it runs for nearly 700 metres through the bog to the River Inney, where there appears to have been some sort of platform of crossing timbers, a bridge of sorts, and then it carries on the other side of the Inney. There's evidence of another oakwood trackway that continues on from there. And it's amazing to see because it's several thousand years old, and there it is, perfectly preserved in the bog at Maine. So we have bog roads and log boats and weirs and bridges and a burial site by the water. We have pagan deities. I know we're bouncing around the timelines a bit here, but all of that stuff qualifies as ancient. And if we shift forward to maybe 2,000 years ago, we're also starting to find plenty of evidence of where people lived in those times. For instance, there's at least 194 ring forts within 3 kilometres of Lochree on the Shannon. And normally such low-lying land wasn't considered ideal for ring forts, but obviously there were other attractions, not least the lake itself, and how that would have provided access to the Shannon running both north and south. On top of that, we have all the crannogs, those semi-artificial circular islands that you find in the lakelands all across Ireland. And cran, it's the Irish for tree, hence crannog. Crannogs were generally built between 16 and 11 centuries ago, although I know some of the crannogs in Scotland turned out to be way older than that, I think even 2,000 or 3,000 years old, so maybe there's a lot of room for interpretation around how old a crannog is. Building a crannog required a huge amount of physical effort in the days before machinery, and a lot of actual material too, a layer upon layer of timber and stone and peat and gravel and brushwood and sods of earth and so on. So they were probably built for the higher echelons of society. How many crannogs were there? It is very difficult to know. I think between Ireland and Northern Ireland they found evidence of about 2,000 to date, but there's probably many more submerged under marshlands and buried in the soggy peats and the clay and behind reeds. I mean, they're finding them all the time. Some are in shallow water, others are way out from the shore. They tend to be on smaller lakes, as the bigger lakes like Lochearn and Loch Derg have more exposed shores, which would have been a little more stormy. And most of those crannogs are, logically enough, in the lakelands of the northwest, in Leitrim and Cavan and Fermanagh. I guess crannogs went out of fashion when the Vikings arrived, and we'll come on to those Scandinavian bad boys later in this series. But hopefully that's given you a little insight into how our waterways were formed, and some clues as to what our ancient ancestors were up to along the waterways of this island. In the next episode, I'll be looking at how these waterways became channels of spirituality, routes by which the word of Christianity could be spread. And indeed, I'll be looking at the monks and occasional nuns who settled along Irish waterways. In the meantime, I'd like to conclude with Seamus Heaney's poem, January God, which I mentioned earlier about Boa Island on Lochearn. Then I found a two-faced stone on burial ground, god-eyed, sex-mouthed, its brain a watery wound. In the wet gap of the year, daubed with fresh lake mud, I faltered near his power. January god, who broke the water. The hymen with his great antlers there rained upon each ghost tyne his familiars. The mothering earth, the stones taken by each wave, the fleshly aftergrass, the bones subsoil in each grave. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and you can hear more episodes from this series by searching Waterways Ireland on Spotify, Apple, Alexa, Google, or whichever platform you get your podcasts. You can find further information about the Waterways on waterwaysireland.org. My sincere thanks to series producer Ali Bunbury and the team at 11 for 10 Productions. And you'll find my own historical archive of stories from the past, mostly Irish, via turtlebunbury.com.